today in three different cases. The Fritz Detmers deceased estate, file number 09E628. There's also a guardianship proceeding on today, TAM E442, and that was the guardianship for a minor, Tolles Detmers, who turned 18 last year. Tolles is present in the courtroom. We also have the living trust of Fritzy Detmers file on today in 15E76. My name is Elizabeth Prune, and I'm the probate judge assigned to this case. Can we go around the table, please, and state appearances? I'm not going to ask the audience to make an appearance, but let's go around the table and do so.
I'm Rick Kane of the Poynter Sproul Law Firm. I represent Peter Cavese.
Your Honor, I'm Mike Allen with Cranford, Buckley, Schultze, etc., and I am the I am serving several roles. I'm the named trustee, the named administrator, and the special fiduciary.
Good morning, Your Honor. My name is Mike Schultze. I'm also with Cranford, Buckley, Schultze, et al., and I am the attorney for our Michael Allen, Mr. Allen, in all three of these proceedings.
Good morning, Your Honor. My name is Christian Perrin of Hickman and Perrin of Mecklenburg County. My client is John Paul Tolles Detmers. He's sitting right next to me. First to go by Tolles Detmers, T-O-L-S.
Thank you. Before we get started, I know we've got a number of motions on, and I thought that it would be appropriate for the court to just share with you my preliminary thoughts, having reviewed the motions, and in hopes that counsel can sort of address some questions and concerns that I have as we, you know, get this thing argued. I would suggest that we take turns argue all the motions, each attorney argue all the motions at one time, if that's okay with everybody here. Here's what I'd like to say preliminarily. In some respects, I'm really pleased with the progress in this case. We have had cooperation from Mr. Pepice insofar as determining what the assets of these three different entities were in 2009 and 2010 when he first became the fiduciary in each of the cases, the estate, the guardianship, and the trust. We also have had an open disclosure from Mr. Pepice that he misappropriated at least $1.5 million from the guardianship and the trust. I think his cooperation in that regard has been significant and substantial, and I also want to point out that I'm really pleased with counsel in this case. This is a difficult case. I've been a lawyer for 25 years. I'm licensed in three jurisdictions. I read bar journals from three jurisdictions. I've never seen anything like it in my career. You know, it's very concerning when a member of the bar misappropriates $1.5 million, which should belong to, it should have been safeguarded for a minor child who is now 18 years old. And so it has been a great assistance to have good lawyers involved in this case, and I want to commend all of you for your work. The place where I've got some disappointment and concern is that while we sort of know what the original corpus was of these different entities when Mr. Pepice took over, we don't know where the money has gone. We know that it was misappropriated, but we don't know what it was spent on. And I want to use a concrete example, and that is, you know, in the trust case, we know a little bit more about what types of things the money was spent on because we have the people's bank records in evidence, right? We know that, you know, Mr. Pepice was paying his mortgage, he was paying his personal bills. We know that he purchased an almost $10,000 engagement ring for his now wife. That's the only asset, to my knowledge, that's been recovered. And conceptually, the way I look at this is if funds were spent to purchase items and the funds came from the trust of the guardianship, they still belong to the trust of the guardianship. And where I see a lack of cooperation is in Mr. Capiz getting us the information we need to determine what really still belongs to the trust and guardianship. To my knowledge, you know, he has been concerned about his privacy and personal bank statements and so forth, or accounts, but you know, I want to point out that back in early March, we entered consent orders in each of the three cases that required, see, this one was entered March 4th in the guardianship case. Within 20 days of entry of this order, Peter Capiz shall deliver to R. Michael Kane and John Coles, the debtor's counsel, all the account records within his custody or reasonably obtainable by him from any financial institution, individual, or entity that has ever been or is presently in custody of guardianship assets. And there were similar orders entered in the trust and estate cases as well. And to my knowledge, that's where disclosure has been lacking. I fully believe that there are tangible assets or intangible assets that could be traced that still belong to the guardianship and trust. So while I think we've made a lot of progress on one front, I don't see as much progress in trying to track down remaining assets. Now, I understand that they're not going to be tangible assets or intangible assets like accounts available for every single dollar that was taken from the trust or the guardianship. We know that $5,000 went to Seapine for a wedding. We're not going to be able to trace that to an asset. But we also know that the credit card of Best Buy was being paid with trust and or guardianship assets. And my question is, what was bought at Best Buy? What things are recoverable that we still haven't tracked down? And I bring this up because when I was reading the motions, this is sort of the conceptual framework that I came up with, and that I would like for you all to address in arguing the motions. And what I really see with the proposed accounts filed by Mr. Capiz, I have reviewed those, and my preliminary impression is that, you know, they do a pretty good job, or even, you know, a very good job at telling us what the original assets were and what interest was earned and that sort of thing. But on the disbursement side, they're lacking. We don't see where the funds were actually spent. All we get is, oh, there was a you know, disbursement made, it got transferred to another account, and then we sort of lose track of it. And what I really want to know, and what I think happens typically in state cases, for example, we'll have a disbursement. Maybe the executor's counsel paid for something. We don't show that as a disbursement to counsel. We show that as a reimbursement to counsel for putting the publication in the paper. Do you know what I'm saying? We just don't have things traced once they go into Mr. Capiz's individual accounts and into the Uniform Transferred Minors Act account that was at Bank of America, I believe it was. And I really want to know what happened with the money and if there are assets or accounts that we can still track down. So having said that, I'd like to sort of go around and hear oral argument with respect to the motions. And just to sort of summarize for the record quickly, it seems like the bulk of the motions are really in the guardianship case. In the estate guardianship and trust case, we've got a request from Mr. Perrin, Tulsa's attorney, for partial approval of Mr. Allen's report. I thank Mr. Allen and his firm very much for that very good report. We have objections to the accountings that have been provided by Mr. Capiz in the trust and guardianship, the guardianship and estate cases, and those objections were filed by Mr. Perrin's office, also by Mr. Allen's office. We have a motion for Mr. Allen's office to be discharged from the guardianship. We have motions for attorney's fees. both by Tolles' counsel and Mr. Allen's office. And then the court also made a motion, and I did it in writing because I wanted everybody to be able to crunch the numbers and look at where I was getting things, to have a little more than $4,000 of filing fees paid to the court by Mr. Papis. So with all that having been said, I think we'll go around the table this way, that Mr. Kane have the last argument, and Mr. Perrin, if you would please begin.
Okay, thank you, Your Honor. I think that my notes align with yours in terms of the issues before the court today. As an initial matter, we did object to the accountings filed by Mr. Capice in the guardianship matter for many of the same reasons that you speak of. We don't think that it really accurately describes the accountings that he provided, accurately describe what happened to the assets. There's also some statements within those accountings that they were distributed to Charlenette Detmers for minor, for tolls, but I think it's clear that substantially, a substantial amount of those assets, if not all of those assets that were distributed to Charlenette, were not for tolls' benefit. My concerns with the Capice guardianship accountings begin on page 2 of my objection to and motion to disapprove those accountings. In addition, since filing these objections and these motions to the guardianship accountings, you know, when I filed these, Mr. Capice had not surrendered his law license. He had not executed that affidavit acknowledging that he misappropriated those funds. And I think that just simply in light of that admission, that Mr. Capice's accountings should be disapproved. Now, I realize a lot of these are quite intertwined. I also have a motion to approve Mike Allen's report, or Michael Allen's report. I agree with your assessment that he did a great job. This is it's a case involving assets moving into a lot of different accounts in a lot of different ways, and I think that he did a great job coming up with the source of those payments and where they went. I agree that Mr. Pease hasn't turned over the information necessary for Mr. Allen to determine where those assets are, or where some of the funds that were spent by Mr. Capice are, but you know, in terms of his initial report, I think it's very helpful, and I'd like to have that approved by the court, with one exception: that the report speaks of a promissory note that Mr. Capice states was executed by Mr. Capice and delivered by Mr. Capice to the decedent during his lifetime, and that the decedent consented to. The note is not witnessed or notarized. It is only signed by Mr. Capice. It's presented by Mr. Capice. There's no evidence, at least that I've seen, that indicates that Mr. Detmers, the decedent, knew of or consented to that note. And my understanding is that in North Carolina, generally speaking, whenever a transaction is entered into between an attorney and a client, that there is a presumption that transaction is not proper. Now, of course, Mr. Kane would have the right to present evidence to rebut that presumption, but that is our concern, our only concern, with your approval of the Mike Allen report as a whole. We would just respectfully request this court make no finding as to the validity of that note as modified and subsequent modifications as well, or the delivery of that note, or the general validity of that note. Also, we filed an objection to, related to that note, we filed an objection and motion to disapprove the estate inventory filed by Mr. Capice. Mr. Capice filed this inventory in response to the court order. He also filed several estate accountings. I think our issue with the inventory in the estate is that it lists as an asset the promissory note for $168,000. So that's one reason we would seek disapproval of that estate inventory, based upon, for the exact same reasons that I just mentioned regarding the validity of the note. I think that covers our three motions, we join in the court's motion for the payment of the guardianship filing fees. It sounds like, with respect to Mr. Allen's objections to the accountings filed by Mr. Capiz, that we are, I think that those two, our motion and his motion to those accountings, pretty much line up. I think a ruling on that would be, and Mike, obviously you'll have the opportunity to speak to that, but I think that we share the same concerns there. I think that that is the, oh yeah, there's one other issue in our mind before the court, or two other issues. The first is the consent order that was entered in the guardianship matter back in March of 2015, included an acknowledgement by Mr. Capiz that he was personally responsible for Toll's reasonable attorney's fees in this matter. Toll's attorney's fees in the guardianship matter have been submitted to all parties at the table for several months. My understanding is that, except for the invoice that was most recently submitted, that Mr. Capiz is not objecting at all to the reasonableness of those fees. The consent order does include a statement, however, that was signed off by all parties that we would work in good faith to establish a payment schedule for the payment of those fees, and that if we were not able to establish a payment schedule, then the court would make a payment schedule and make a determination in that regard. Obviously, Mr. Cain will have the opportunity to discuss that as well. So we would ask the court to at least discuss and possibly decide that matter. I know that to date, I'll have to, as Mike Allen and Rick are speaking, I'll go ahead and total Toll's attorney's fees to date in the guardianship matter that Rick has not objected to based upon the reasonableness of them, so that the court can have a finite sum to consider. And then I think that is all that I have before the court today. And those are my thoughts on that.
Mr. Allen,
Mr.
Schultz?
Come on.
Mr. Allen has pointed the gun at me. good morning. Let me try to address them in the same order there. With respect to the approval of Mr. Allen's report, we have no objection to your approving the same with no finding as to the legal validity of the note one way or the other. I understand the arguments from both sides on that, and otherwise we would join in to the extent necessary on your receiving that and approving that order. That would lead me sort of to the general objection we filed with respect to the countings. What we did, Your Honor, was first the charge to Mr. Allen was to find out what happened in these three matters. So that was the focus of our efforts and the result of the report, or the report was the result of that focus. We have not necessarily gone through these accountings because our position was, to the extent any of the accountings are inconsistent with our report, then we object. If they are not, then Your Honor is fully capable of determining whether there have been adequate evidence of those disbursements, as you've noted, and those monies coming in. So we couched our motion in terms of just a general objection, that is, to the extent anything in the accountings is inconsistent with the report of Mr. Allen, then we would object to that. If it is not inconsistent, then it is whatever Your Honor would decide based upon Mr. Perrin's objections and any response from Mr. Kane. With respect to the question of our motion for a discharge of Mr. Allen, he was appointed by Your Honor in three capacities. One capacity, which is relevant to our motion, is as special fiduciary in the guardianship. Tolles Detmers is now age of majority and represented by able counsel. With respect to the charge to Mr. Allen as special fiduciary, he undertook that examination, determined these records. We have reached a point, and we'll address those later, but a point where, that Your Honor raised, which is we are at the point in which we can find the money coming in, and we can find it going out, but we don't know what happened after that. And that's, we're in the process of doing that. But given the charge to Mr. Allen as special fiduciary in the guardianship, and being sensitive to the goal being to raise and find as much of these assets for the benefit of Tolles, so that we are not necessarily doing the same work that Mr. Perrin is doing, we think that it is appropriate at this point for Mr. Allen to be discharged, subject to any further concerns Your Honor might have. We think that we, you know, have an adequate remedy to pursue issues with respect to Mr. Allen as successor trustee. There are state issues. We would certainly come back to the court for any further reappointment of that became necessary from Mr. Capisa's standpoint, but at this point, given his cooperation to date thus far, we are not anticipating any issues that we would not be able to address in capacity as successor trustee or trustee, or that Mr. Perrin will be addressing as Tolles counsel now that he's reached the age of majority. So we have that motion pending. We also given the consent order agreement and the mandatory nature of the statute, we have also submitted, therefore, our request for attorney's fees, and provided also to Mr. Kane a more detailed billing and history of that, which he has been given and would like to review. But in essentially, we have looked at the totality of the work and made an honest and we think intelligent division as between the work necessitated as trustee and the work necessitated in the guardianship proceeding, and have arrived at that. What we would propose to Your Honor, and if it's acceptable to the other attorneys, is that Your Honor, approve attorney's fees as a judgment against Mr. Capisa, but subject to Mr. Kane's further review of all of the information provided to him, perhaps 10 days, and if he has any objection, or if he would like to be heard by Your Honor, perhaps we could do it with a conference call or something, but absent any further objection, and absent any request for any further clarification or hearing, that Your Honor would enter a judgment against Mr. Capisa for the attorney's fees that he's agreed to pay and by statute should pay, and that we think are reasonable in light of the totality of the work that we undertook. I think we completely understand the filing fees and the necessity of that. Mr. King has also made us aware of Mr. Capisa's present financial situation, and we understand that we have to work with him in some capacity, in some way, but we also don't want to be hamstrung out for some extended period of time, and we want, I think, and it's very reasonable, the ability to be paid from whatever other sources are available, whether it's the guardianship or the itself or the trust. And I think, subject to Mr. Allen's additional comments, that would be our presentation.
Your Honor, I think Mr. Schulze has laid out our position fine. I would just say with respect to the accountings that Mr. Cabeas has presented, I mean, I would ask that they be received by the court, not accepted, but just received for the file. This is not exactly the same category, but the court mentioned the ring. We have also picked up a Hyundai automobile. Now, it was actually titled in the trust name, so it was a trust asset, but we have taken possession of that just so the court is aware of that. But as to the motions, Mr. Schulze's laid out our position fine.
Well, Your Honor, I'm a little concerned that I may omit to respond to something that should respond. So if the court would, let me just ask the court to ask questions if I leave anything out. I would like to start with talking about the assets. Mr. Peace understands that these folks have a legitimate interest in tracing the assets. He's anxious to cooperate in that. He has cooperated in every other aspect of the investigation. However, he's very concerned that putting personal financial information in the courthouse record, in the public record, available to anybody who wants to come by and see his account numbers and all that sort of thing, is opening himself and his wife and his three children to fraud. Because of that, we're working with Mr. Schulze in particular and hope to provide a protective order that will allow the redaction of personal identifying information so that Mr. Peace and his family do not themselves fall victim to wrongdoing. I do have to, I've been asked by Mr. Peace to voice one exception to Mr. Allen's otherwise signed report. There's a bit of information in it to the effect that Mr. Peace admitted that the reason that he did not seek to recover money and allowed money to go to Mrs. Detmers was basically he was paying hush money. He was afraid that if he took action against her, that she would blow his cover. Your Honor, Mr. Peace did not say that. We certainly don't dispute the reasonableness of that as an inference. Would actually take exception to it, but we don't dispute the reasonableness of it as an inference, but it is just an inference. As to attorney's fees and the guardianship matter, Mr. Perrin is correct. We have either voiced no objection to his previous fees, except with one exception, and as to that exception, we withdrew our objection. On the other hand, we received detailed information last night and this morning concerning additional fees sought by Mr. Perrin and by Mr. Allen and Mr. Schulze. And we simply have not had the opportunity to review those. Mr. Capiz, for example, hasn't seen it all. So I think that Mr. Schulze's idea is a pretty good one. 10 days ought to be enough for us to review these detailed invoices that were received in the last 24 hours and to voice any objections that we might have, and failing to make objection, we consent to the entry of another requirement to pay those fees. Now, how and when the various fees in this case get paid is going to be a much more difficult question. I hear a lot of rumors about Mr. Capiz, that he's left the state, that he's in the Bahamas. To best of my knowledge, none of that is true. He's working two jobs as a laborer for an hourly wage. He does have a wife and three children to feed and otherwise support. Mrs. Capiz has taken a job. I simply can't give the court details at this time, because I don't have them, about the income downstream that these various jobs are producing, the extent to which Mr. Capice's, their Capice's family's income exceeds their basic needs. I don't know that. But we will be happy to work with these gentlemen as necessary to figure that out, provide documentation as necessary. It's just it's a question we can't answer today. Just as we have no objection to the attorney's fees of which we've been made aware of other than those in the last 24 hours, we have no objection to the court's final fees either. Your Honor, unless I've omitted to address one topic or another, that would be all we can say at this time.
Mr. King, do you have any objection to the court receiving into evidence Mr. Allen's report subject to a provision that Mr. Capice disputes that that statement regarding, I'll just call it, you know, about hush money being paid to the mother, and leave that open for cross-examination at a later date if Mr. Capice wants to pursue that?
If necessary, no objection at all, and no objection to the use of Mr. Capice's disbarment order for any purpose in these proceedings.
And I have a question, if you don't mind if I jump to Mr. Perrin for a moment. Do you have any objection to the court receiving the Allen report into evidence with that exception and the exception that we're going to make any sort of finding about whether or not the promissory note for $168,000 was valid?
No, I don't think so, Your Honor, particularly in light of Mr. Capice's admission in the consent order of disbarment and the affidavit attached to that document. I don't think that we have any objections to that. And just to be clear, it's a exception that you're speaking of that makes no finding regarding whether or not he was paying hush money. Not that statement within the Allen report is correct, just that you make no finding regarding that statement. Is that correct?
Correct.
Yes, we have no objection to that.
And I want to, you know, put in an order, if everybody's in agreement, that we're going to admit the Allen report into evidence, subject to the court not making any finding about whether or not the promissory note was valid, and acknowledging that, and also not making any finding about whether that statement about hush money was valid because Mr. Capice denies that statement.
That's correct. And the term hush money isn't used in
I'm just trying to.
Unfortunately, I put that into play.
And Your Honor, I apologize. I cut you off. Keep going.
Yeah. I wish I had said that. But there is a statement that Mr. Capice admitted to allowing Carolyn F. to receive money because he was afraid that she would otherwise tell on him.
Right.
He did not say that, and he would dispute it with that. But so we asked that that be kept out of the court's mind.
And just to be specific for the record, I think it's two sentences in the report that read, Mr. Capice reported he did not investigate or pursue the matter further out of concern that Charlotte would retain an attorney to represent her. If Charlotte hired an attorney, Mr. Capice believed an attorney would investigate his administration of the guardianship accounts and discover the misconduct. I think that's the two sentences we're talking about.
Your Honor, what page is that on?
It's on page 7.
Okay.
And, you know, if we're going to, I would also like to add that I believe the $5,000 to Steve Pines was not just for a family vacation, but was actually for his wedding, and I would like to point that out, so if nobody has any objection to that.
I think that's factually correct.
Okay. So I think we've taken care of that issue. With respect to Mr. Capice's accountings, it may be most expeditious for us to to follow Mr. Schulze and Mr. Allen's recommendation that we put them in the record, but we do not do any sort of approval, but we have them file stamp in the record and the finding being made that the court is not going to approve them. Is there an objection to that?
No objection,
no. No objection.
And, Your Honor, is that both for the estate and the guardianship?
That's my inclination. And I think with respect to the estate, I'm glad you brought that up. We're also going to make no finding about the validity of the promissory note that's listed on the inventory.
That would be consistent.
I don't mean to interject, Your Honor, but as I understood what just happened, the court is going, is not going to accept these accountings, but neither will it reject it. Is that correct?
See, that's tough because, well, at this time, let's just hold it open.
Okay.
Can we hold it open about an acceptance or rejection? My problem with doing that, as I mentioned at the beginning, is I think that they're probably, with respect to the guardianship in particular, probably quite accurate as far as what the initial corpus was and what the income was earned on over the 5 years. But my concern is that the disbursements basically just treat like a transfer from one account to another as a disbursement, and I have a problem with that conceptually because I think that remains guardianship money and needs to be traced out to the end. And that kind of brings me to the discharging Mr. Allen as special fiduciary in the guardianship. I'm understanding from Mr. Perrin that there's no objection to that. Is that right, Mr. Perrin?
I believe so, Your Honor, and let me think about that for a minute. I think one of my concerns is that Rick, I know that you've spoken of your client's concern about personal financial information being on public record. And I guess I just want to make sure that we're on the same page. Once we come to an agreement on a redaction agreement, or I believe you mentioned doing it in the form of a protective order, your client intends to share the personal financial information, not just with Mr. Allen's office, but also our office as well?
That's correct.
And it would include the reports that, I'm sorry, not the reports, the account statements for the accounts that Mr. Allen's report indicates guardianship assets were transferred into. I believe there's 7 or 8 accounts there for the time period in question.
Agreed.
Okay. Your Honor, I think we wouldn't have any objection to Mike Allen's discharge if we could also cover those bases in that order.
Here's my concern. If I discharge Mr. Allen, does this court retain jurisdiction? Because right now, I think I have jurisdiction to trace guardianship assets. If we don't have a fiduciary on board anymore, are we essentially saying the guardianship is going to be closed up without figuring out where the money was spent and what it was spent on, at least for purposes of the guardianship case that's currently before the court?
Your Honor, I mean, believe me, we're not in any way trying to avoid any responsibility that the court may want us to have. We're really just looking more at the economy of resources. So if the court wants us to stay involved, we're happy to do that. I guess our thinking was just that the court would retain jurisdiction, but that Tolles would have, you know, as an adult, would have the ability to pursue whatever claims that the guardianship had. I mean, and Your Honor, again, we're happy to stay in, so we're willing to do whatever the court would like.
And I don't want to duplicate efforts, okay? Because I'm sort of trying to weigh this out. Because I mean, I hear that concern as well, but also, part of my responsibility as the probate judge in this case is to make sure that we find out where the guardianship assets went. I mean, I need to have some sort of final account in my file that gives that I think traces the guardianship funds all the way to the end of whatever was they were spent on, if it was a trip or if it was an item or if it's sitting in a bank account or the Bear Santa Croce Trust, Mr. Yes. $5,000 from the money that Tolles was supposed to get. And my concern is if we just discharge the fiduciary, it's almost like closing up the guardianship case without ever engaging in that exercise.
Well, given that concern, Your Honor, then maybe, and maybe you leave the special fiduciary in place with respect to the jurisdictional concerns. Our other concern was we wanted some clarification that in fact what we would be doing is what you just said, which is we will continue to get these records and trace, but to the extent that there's litigation involved in terms of pursuing the claims of Tolles, he has a counsel for that. We did not want to be in a position where at some point an argument would be made that we should have pursued not just an investigation of where the money went and the report, but should have pursued some claims within the guardianship. And so that was a concern now that he is of majority and has counsel with that. If the understanding is that the special fiduciary remains in place to grant the jurisdiction to Mr. Allen to continue the tracing.
I think that's what I'm talking about more than, for example, the way an executor would act in an estate case, which would be, you know, you would be required to take possession of the assets and, you know, disperse or distribute them appropriately. I don't think I'm asking you all to actually, I mean, to the extent that you facilitated the return of certain items, the car and the ring, you know, I appreciate that, but I'm not really charging you with taking possession of the assets. But I do think that your role as an independent fiduciary tracing where the money's actually went is a really important source of information for the court. And I would like to see you, you know, I think we've got a ton of work done, but I think there's a bunch of work in front of us with those all those individual accounts of Mr. Pieces that need to be dug through and figure out, are there assets that are recoverable for Tolles? And, you know, I mentioned, for example, it's troubling to the court that, at least in part, you know, Mr. Pease continues to get the benefit of these items that he's purchased with, you know, almost $1 million, I think, according to Mr. Allen's report, $975,000 went to Mr. Pease's benefit himself. I mean, that's excluding $500,000 that he gave Mom. And I just think there are tangible assets out there that we need to try to track down and recover for Tolles. And I think your work in that regard is really important.
Your Honor, could the order state that I would remain as special fiduciary just in that investigative role? Could it limit, I mean, we would have concerns that you know, we not have some additional responsibility, as Mr. Schulze said, maybe to go out and do more than investigate. But I agree with you, Your Honor, because all of this is so tied up in the same ball, it's hard to pull out and say, okay, we're going to investigate this, but not the guardianship. I mean, it's just all the same ball of yarn.
Right, whereas, I mean, I understand in a trust case, you are actually acting as trustee, which is a very different role from the special fiduciary role I'm asking you to.
Right.
I want us to consider you to continue playing for the guardianship. And I do acknowledge that Tolles is an adult now. He's got really good counsel. And, I mean, I think in terms of taking possession of assets and that sort of thing, that I'm not necessarily asking for you to do that, although, you know, I do want to hear that if we, you know, trace a fancy TV to the Best Buy account, and we know without paying the trust or guardianship funds that we're going to have some cooperation in getting that turned over. And, you know, it may be that we have to come back and give you more responsibility in that regard, but for now, I'm happy with the investigative piece, if you all would be so kind as to stay on in that capacity.
Okay, absolutely.
Protective order issues. I mean, if counsel agrees to protective orders, I mean, the court really wants to you know, we've had a lot of cooperation, we've had a lot of consent agreements in this case. I don't want to in any way interfere with that. So to the extent that you all can make agreements, that's fine. My only concern is that conceptually, I'm having a hard time understanding. I mean, all concede or for the sake of argument, acknowledge that privacy interests can rise to constitutional dimensions, that there's got to be, you know, some sort of compelling state interest in order for me to make an order that invades, you know, constitutionally protected privacy rights. My question here is, you know, when a fiduciary, an attorney, fiduciary, takes assets, misappropriates them, and puts them into his own account, has his conduct not given rise to a compelling state interest in discovering his personal accounts? My other question is, I mean, there are a number of accounts listed. If he's so short on resources, why are these accounts open? You know, I understand the sensitivity with respect to social security numbers. Of course, we will redact those, but does he really have all of these accounts still open? I mean, I would expect that if he's destitute, as he's claiming, that many of these accounts would no longer be open. So the privacy concern is really sort of, you know, I'm not really buying into it. And, you know, the other thing I would say is, I think it's the law of the case. We got a consent order saying he's going to turn it over. So, I mean, those would be sort of my arguments. I don't want to interfere. Again, we've had a lot of cooperation. We've made a lot of progress. We've got a ways to go. But those would really be my concerns about, you know, the scope of the protective order. And, you know, I'll just leave it at that for now. If it came before the court, you know, on an objection to a subpoena or motion for protective order, those would be my initial thoughts. So just to let you know where I'm at.
But you are comfortable with Social Security numbers things?
Absolutely, just redacting. We don't need those. We don't need any Social Security numbers. If it's an existing account that's still open, you know, let's redact the account number. I mean, those sorts of things aren't really a problem. And again, I doubt that it's going to be this big of an issue if all these accounts are closed because he doesn't have any more money.
And I think many of the accounts as well, the last four digits are consistently identified in the Allen report for both the fiduciary accounts and Mr. Detmer, or Mr. Capice's personal accounts, Your Honor. We'd be comfortable just having accounts identified by the last four digits in the institution name.
It'll be easier to follow and it'll be easy to match up, you know, this report to any future information. Money. Mr. Capice has chosen not to be here today. I mean, he's chosen not to turn over his personal account records. The court really doesn't have any reason to believe, you know, except that, you know, I have a lot of respect for Mr. Payne, and I, you know, but what he says is not necessarily testimony, and I don't have any bank statements backing it up. I don't have any testimony from Mr. Capice backing it up, and, you know, I'm not really inclined to put him on a payment schedule when I haven't seen what he still has and whether or not he's got personal assets that could be liquidated to pay for things that weren't paid for with guardianship and trust funds. So the court is inclined to enter an order. Let me first say my understanding is that I am reserving ruling on the amount of the Allen fees, right, because there's been additional documentation provided about itemization of that. Is that right?
Just this morning, that's correct, Your Honor, and just last night with respect to Mr. Perrin's fees.
Okay, so I'm not going to make any ruling about the amounts of those until Mr. Tate has 10 days to file written objections, and if possible, you know, if there is an objection, I'm hoping that maybe we can deal with that in a conference call, and if not, we'll bring it to a formal hearing, but maybe we can try to to reach agreements to the extent possible. With respect to Mr. Perrin's prior month's fees that have not been objected to by Mr. Capice under the process that we put in place in the consent orders, and with respect to the court filing fees that I set forth in the court's motion at total $4,436.48. Christian, do you have your total on the attorney's fees?
You know, Your Honor, I have three invoices, and I believe that there's one more that I omitted that I think is less than $1,000. I turned my phone off, and that means I don't have my calculator, so I apologize for that. I believe that the consent order listed the amount that had been listed, $3,547.50, that had already been incurred. And then subsequent to that, we submitted to this court an additional invoice.
Can you say that first one again?
Sure. The consent order entered in the guardianship on March 4th, 2015 list states that to date, total debtors has incurred $3,547.50 in attorney's fees in the context of the guardianship. Okay. I believe that I've also submitted an invoice to this court subsequent to the entry of that order in the amount of $1,960.98. And I believe that that was the 196098. And that was the invoice that Mr. Kane made an initial objection to, and then subsequently withdrew that objection. And I believe that that got us through the end of March. And as I mentioned in the email that I sent out last night, in the context of the guardianship, April was a slow month. We didn't do much work, quite candidly, because we were waiting for Mike Allen's report, which was timely filed at the end of April. So last night, and I don't expect the court to make any, I think we all acknowledge and agree that the invoice I sent out last night is context or further discussion, but that amount was $3,723.92. And that was time spent on reviewing the Allen report, reviewing and analyzing the guardianship accounting, filing our objections to those accountings.
Okay, so that's the amount that we're holding open for 10 days to hear about objections?
I believe so.
Okay, so we have the two billing statements otherwise that have not been objected to, right? The one that's stated in the consent order and the other one?
For $1,960.98, that's
okay.
Right.
I'm going to make an order that, and this is really largely in part because I don't have the information about what Mr. Capice has now, and I'm really talking about bank statements, testimony, those types of, admissible evidence rather than just argument from counsel, and so I'm going to give them 30 days to pay both the court filing fees as well as the $3,547.50 paid in the consent order for Mr. Perrin's fees and the $1,960.98 that was an invoice that was submitted previously, to which there is no current objection from Mr. Capice, as I understand it. What else do we need to do?
Just one point of clarification, Your Honor. With respect to the 10 days on ours, we do not want to be precluded if for some reason we are not paid by Mr. Capice from requesting payment and from the guardianship or the trust. But I understand that we obviously will understand his obligations.
I understand, and I think until I see documentation that Mr. Capice does not have the ability to pay all of this, I'm inclined to order him to pay it, and he can show cause at a later date if he fails to. But I'm going to insist on seeing what he's got, and I want the guardianship and trust assets, tangible and intangible, turned over to Mr. Detmers, Bowles Detmers, ASAP. I mean, that is a big priority for me. I'm worried about them going missing. I'm worried about funds being spent on vacations. I'm really worried, and I know this has been a tremendous time commitment on everybody's part. And I recognize that, and I want to say again, I think everybody at this table has done an outstanding job, and I think we just have to keep at it, and I really hope that Mr. Capiz will continue in the same vein of cooperation that he has to get us to where we're at now. I mean, we know what the money was, we know that it's been misappropriated, now where did it go?
Your Honor, just to clarify one thing you just said, guardianship assets, yes, turned over to Tolles, but trust assets turned over to me as trustee.
Correct, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
For the benefit of the beneficiary of the trust, Tolles Detmers, but yes, Mr. Allen would be the legal owner of those
right.
assets, and they would be turned over to him. Thank you for that correction.
That's right.
Any further?
Just one further clarification what Mr. Allen said. I think the Allen report states that approximately $129,000 of guardianship assets were turned over to the trust, or were at least transferred to the trust bank account. And then I also think that some of the trust funds were then put into his IOLTA account, Mr. Capiz's IOLTA account. So, and Mike, we can just work through that to the extent we can determine, well, this amount of guardianship assets went into the trust. We can,
yeah.
You know, especially if it's tangible property, it might make sense for Tolles to receive those if they're in the trust currently as part of trying to take some of those assets and put them back in the guardianship, because it looks like some assets did go from the guardianship to the trust account before they were misappropriated.
Yeah, we would just need to look at each one, I would say. And Your Honor, you understand that once it went into the IOLTA account, it's kind of a black hole for us at that point. We couldn't really look into that. I mean, we depend on the state bar to, which they've given us some information about that now.
And I would think that if you need them, that you can get them by subpoena. I mean, of course, there may be a request for protective order that ensues, but...
They have given us information about the IOLTA accounts now. I don't think we had it at the time we did the report.
Mm-hmm. Are you speaking of the North Carolina State Bar's report? Yes, there's I'm guessing, Mike, there's a general ledger that
right.
deals with funds that were placed into Mr. Capiz's IOLTA account for either Tolles' benefit or on behalf of the trust, and they follow those. At one point, there was a negative balance in there, but I think the most that went in there was, I think it does clarify that the $118,000 that's mentioned in Mr. Allen's report was moved into the IOLTA account. The state bar did determine that. They were able to confirm that that actually did happen.
I'll do a proposed order, circulate it, let you all comment, and proceed that way. And then within 10 days, we'll hear any objections to Mr. Allen's fees and Mr. Ferris' most recent invoice and try to work through that. All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Appreciate you coming.